at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A major theme of Maggie Hassan's campaign for New Hampshire governor was her promise to restore much of the cuts Republicans had made to the university system. And in her own budget, Hassan added a fair bit of money back, about $35 million over the biennium. But now, as the House Finance Committee finalizes its budget, it looks like less may be in store, as much as $12 million less, under a committee plan debated yesterday. Still, the budget's a long way from finalized, the full House hasn't voted yet, and the Republican-controlled Senate has yet to have its say. All this uncertainty around university system funding is familiar to our guest today, University of New Hampshire President Mark Huddleston. But Huddleston's not waiting around for the outcome. He's been making his case across the state, especially to the legislature, about why higher education and UNH in particular need more funding. And he's been promising for his part to do more to help lower college costs and student debt. Today in The Exchange, UNH President Mark Huddleston is back. We'll talk about his hopes for the budget. Also, other major happenings at UNH's Durham, Manchester, and now Concord campuses with the new UNH School of Law. Let's hear from you, your questions for President Huddleston, and your comments about UNH's role in our state, whether it's done enough to reduce costs, and what UNH might do better than it does now. Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org. We can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And President Huddleston, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
By the way, we'll also be live blogging this interview today, so you can find that at nhpr.org. If you only hear pieces of the interview and want to enjoy all of it, go to nhpr.org where we're live blogging this. And your reaction to the news today, President Huddleston, that the House Finance Committee is looking at $12 million less for the university system from what Governor Hassan wanted in her budget.
Well, that's a little disappointing. Certainly, the conversation has been different this year than it was in the last biennium, and overall, I've been pleased with the reception that the university system has gotten in Concord, although I am disappointed that the House Finance Committee has not been able to support fully the governor's budget request.
They've said that because they are not counting on the $80 million from the casino revenue, so that's the logic there.
Exactly. And I don't think this discussion is done for exactly that reason. I think that the budget that comes out of the Senate will look very different than the one that comes out of the House.
And the revenue streams keep changing and the revenue numbers come in and
so
forth. So we're halfway through the game here.
Yep.
So you've promised President Huddleston to keep tuition frozen in exchange for restoration of your funding. If it isn't completely restored, 100% or 90%, what the governor wants, can you still freeze tuition if it's only 80% of what you had or 75%? Is there a cutoff there where you can't, where you can no longer make that promise?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question yet. We'll sharpen our pencils and do the very best that we can. Our commitment to freeze tuition is not simply something that an agreement we've made with the legislature. It's because we have a fundamental commitment to keep costs as low as possible for students and families. And we want to do that regardless of what the legislature does. But obviously, our ability to do that will be a function of what the state is able to provide in terms of support.
And I have to ask you this. When this promise was first made, some critics said, hey, why couldn't you do that before when you had the $100 million, half of which you lost under the last budget? What do you think about that?
Well, the money that we lost in the last biennium, it was very painful, and it meant that we had to do things that weren't particularly pleasant or good for higher education in the state. We had to lay people off. Some people lost their jobs. We had to make compromises in other areas. So it's not easy simply to freeze tuition without consequences on the other side of the equation. And our ability to do it now is a function really of the fact that all those painful decisions have already been made and those cuts have taken place, and therefore the restoration of the funds would allow us to make good on that commitment.
When you said we had to lay people off and make compromises in other areas, what kind of compromises, President Huddleston?
Well, classes are a little bit bigger. Some classes aren't available as readily as some students might like. You know, actions have consequences, and not getting the funding that that we needed has had some impact on what we've been able to do. I think the quality of education has not fundamentally suffered. At least undergraduates will not have noticed it, but our faculty are working harder, and our staff is smaller, and they're working harder, and we're talking about a teaching core and staff at the university that was already amongst the leanest in the nation. And we have people doing multiple jobs who really shouldn't be doing multiple jobs. My favorite example is that I think we're the only university in the country where our chief financial officer is also our chief information officer. And that individual also happens to be my go-to for virtually every other hard assignment. And that's just, it's hard to keep asking people to do that year after year after year, and not see burnout and not see people leave for more pleasant situations elsewhere.
Yeah, and did you sort of nip and tuck in terms of coursework for students? You said some classes might not be as readily available as they wanted. Or did you sort of eliminate whole departments or whole fields of study?
Yeah, we went through a very careful program-by-program review at the university, making sure that what we have on offer is really appropriate and is in demand. We have not eliminated any whole programs because, as I said earlier, we're a very lean institution, and I think had already cut pretty close to the bone in terms of what we were making available. So we haven't eliminated programs, but we have, as I said, had to rely on fewer people doing more things, and probably stuffing an extra seat or two into a classroom that otherwise we wouldn't have had to do.
And pardon me for not remembering President Huddleston, but did you get rid of certain athletic programs?
No, not in this round.
There was some fear that you might get rid of, you know, one or two particular
programs.
Yeah,
I'm still hearing about programs that got eliminated before I was born and before I came to the university. So I hope we
really?
Can. Oh, sure.
You're saying people feel strongly about this.
Yeah. Baseball's the one that comes up constantly.
You often hear, "Hey, why'd you get rid of baseball back in whenever?"
Often is not an extreme way to put it. Yes, every time I come to Concord, I hear about baseball.
All right. Well, let me invite our listeners to join us, and then a lot more to talk about. The number for you to be part of our conversation this hour is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We're talking with Mark Huddleston today, president of the University of New Hampshire, which includes not only UNH Durham, but UNH Manchester and the new UNH School of Law in Concord. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And President Huddleston, it's a well-known fact that New Hampshire has just about the lowest state contribution to public higher education. The university system, you wrote recently, receives 6% of its budget from the state. Here's my question. That's pretty small in the big picture. Why even bother fighting this fight every year if it's just 6%?
Well, every little bit helps. Every dollar that we get from the state goes to buy down the cost of higher education for New Hampshire residents and for many people, for many families. Those few dollars that come through from the state can make a difference between being able to afford or not being able to afford sending a son or daughter to the university system. So I think it's a fight well worth fighting for that reason. And for me, more broadly, it's a fight worth fighting because there's a principle at stake. I think that higher education is not simply, as economists would say, a private good. It's a public good. It's something that helps the whole state to have a vital system of public higher education. In fact, I'd return to the first question that you asked me, or the first observation that you made, had to do with why higher education needs more funding in the state. I'd reframe that, and I'd say the state needs better funding for higher education. It's not that higher ed needs it. In fact, when I made my first presentation of the legislature this year, I talked about the need for a new partnership between higher education and the state. For all the years I've been here, there's been a divide between the legislature and the university system, as if we were enemies, as if what we were doing in higher ed was somehow contrary to the interests of the people of New Hampshire. Nothing could be further from the truth. If you look at neighboring states where partnerships have been forged, in Connecticut and Massachusetts and and elsewhere around the country, the payback to the people in those states, far beyond the immediate realm of higher education, is enormous in terms of job growth and opportunities for people in those states. So it's really important to understand that a dollar that goes to higher education is a dollar that benefits everyone in the state. Not
Do you think
just,
people see that, though?
I don't.
I think
I don't.
People think, oh, I went there, it was great for me, or no, I went to a school outside New Hampshire and you know, nice for UNH, but I don't really see the benefit.
Yeah, I don't think people immediately see that, which is why I've made it a kind of cause to make that point. And I believe it at my core. I really do. I don't think that I can imagine in my wildest imaginings how New Hampshire can be successful in the 21st century absent a robust system of public higher education. It won't happen. And I care about the state. I care about what happens to it. And I think that an approach of defunding our institutions of higher education is a recipe for disaster for New Hampshire.
Give me a concrete example, please, of how anybody listening who didn't go to a university, a higher education here in New Hampshire, how they have benefited from what you guys are doing.
Sure. We live in a knowledge economy. We live in an economy in the 21st century in which the jobs of today and tomorrow are going to be linked to the revolution in information technology and other high-tech developments. And many of those either come directly out of the university or certainly the workforce that is required in order to participate in those industries and to create those technologies comes out of the universities. And so try to imagine a state in which there was no university either producing those technologies or producing those workers, and imagine trying to compete with Europe or with China or with other major states in America that have forged that kind of partnership. You can't do it. It just would be a very bleak, economically dismal future to contemplate.
All right. We will talk more after a short break. Lots more to follow up on President Huddleston, and we'll take your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR is more than our daily broadcast. Check out our website to listen back to a story you might have missed or only caught a part of. Find more information or related stories about something that interests you. Subscribe to podcasts. Learn about special events. There's always something more at NHPR.org. More with UNH President Mark Huddleston on The Exchange, then attend on The Diane Rehm Show, debate over allowing nurses to do more without doctors' supervision. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Bank of New Hampshire, proudly serving New Hampshire families, businesses, and communities for 182 years. We love New Hampshire, banknh.com. And New Hampshire's community colleges committed to increasing the number of science, technology, engineering, and math graduates in New Hampshire, ccsnh.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Mark Huddleston is here. He's the president of UNH. We're talking about current initiatives at the campuses and challenges before the university, especially given state funding struggles. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. How do you hope UNH tackles these problems of high college costs and student debt while not sacrificing quality, by the way? What do you think the right way is to go about this? What's the wrong way? Also, if you're a student at UNH or the parent of one, where do you see the university doing well? How could it improve? Let's hear from you this hour. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And by the way, we're live blogging our conversation with President Huddleston today. You can find out more at nhpr.org. Before we go to our listeners, President Huddleston, a couple more questions. Given the high cost of college, I mean, not just here, everywhere, this is a huge issue. People have called this the next bubble to burst, kind of like real estate. But especially here in New Hampshire, given that college is especially expensive here, as you well know, many Granite State young people are graduating with lots and lots of debt. I think we often are number one or number two in terms of student debt loads in the nation. How do you fix that? I mean, I know you can't fix the whole thing. You're only the head of one institution, but how do you even begin to tackle that? It's huge.
Yeah, it is a huge challenge for sure, and I think that it will require multiple approaches to try to resolve it. What we've done at UNH is to try to keep our costs as low as possible to start with. That's one part of the equation. We are proud of the fact that each credit hour at UNH costs about 70%, 70% of what it costs to provide a similar hour of credit instruction at our sister institutions around the country, which is pretty remarkable. I think people in New Hampshire need to recognize how cost-effective we are. So that's one thing. Second thing we try to do is obviously to make a case to the people of the state that we're worth public investment, which is why I plan to go and visit our friends in the legislature after I leave you this morning. Thirdly, we've tried to multiply our revenue streams from non-traditional sources in order to provide ways to offset the costs of the university. I've been very interested in trying to commercialize our intellectual property, for instance, at the university. We've brought in a whole host of international students that add a lot of dimensions to the campus, but also provide additional revenue to the university. And we'll continue to try to do things that bring dollars in that otherwise wouldn't be there. And finally, I guess I'd say fourthly, what we've tried to do is offer students choice about how they get their education in order to go through the university more quickly, to take advantage of online education, to take advantage perhaps of spending some time in the community colleges first before they come to the university. We've been using the phrase university of choice to refer to UNH. It has multiple meanings, but one of them is certainly trying to give students as many options as possible to get their UNH education, keep the cost down.
Are you looking at, I think you are already doing this, the use of what they call January term. Instead of having that long January break, you use that. Also, I'm imagining summer coursework is an option.
Absolutely. J-term is one of the few things I'll actually take some credit for. When I spent most of my career at the University of Delaware, where we had a five-week winter session, as we called it there, which was terrific for students, for faculty, for everybody, and it gave the kids an opportunity to accelerate their time to degree, as well as to do things like study abroad more readily. And UNH introduced that as an innovation, I think now 3 years ago, and it's been very popular, very successful, and I'd like to see it grow. And that's part of the University of Choice idea. I'd like to see us use the full year, not just two semesters, but the full 365 days and 24/7. Make opportunities available for students to do their coursework.
You also mentioned expanding the number of foreign students, President Huddleston, at the university with a company called Navitas, and we did a whole program on this a year or two ago. What are the benefits of expanding the international student body?
Oh, they're tremendous. There are no downsides to doing this. Navitas is an Australian company that helps us run a bridge program to bring in qualified students from around the world and help give them a little bit of a boost during their first year if they need a little bit of extra help in English or math or what have you. And by the time they're done with that, they're ready to be full-fledged UNH students. And right now we have approximately 200 students on campus who otherwise would not be there from Asia, from Africa, from Latin America, 30 of whom have now graduated from that bridge program and are just full UNH students. And one of my favorite factoids I learned just yesterday is that 30 of those 30 students who are now full-fledged UNH students from the Navitas cohort, five of them have actually applied to become RAs, resident assistants.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
in their dorm.
How much better integration can there be into the UNH student body? But, you know, the nice thing is that the dining halls now have much more international cuisine, and you walk across campus and you hear different languages and see evidence of different cultures. So it's been a boon to the campus just across the board.
Well, when this first started, some folks were saying, hey, you know, I understand that they're paying full freight, and that's great for the university budget. But there was a concern, President Huddleston, that these foreign students might be taking seats from New Hampshire students.
Absolutely not. We have a commitment, statutory as well as just a moral commitment, to accept every qualified New Hampshire student. And we will do that.
Really? You have to do that by law?
By law. And but it's not a burden. It's part of our mission. That's something that we want to do, and we will continue to do. And there has not been a single New Hampshire student who has been turned away because of our increased international enrollment.
One more question on the costs and the debt that we talked about just a minute ago. Given those costs, a lot of young people, and we hear from them, are just concluding that it's not worth it. That college degree is not worth it. It's better just to go from high school to work or get that two-year degree that will help them land a good job. What do you say to those young people, President Huddleston, who really question whether that degree is worth it?
Well, it's a complicated issue. I think that I don't think everyone has to go to college to have a good life. I think that there are many different paths to success in this world, and that for some people, colleges may not be the best answer. However, I think that as an economic fact, college is still a good investment. We know in the aggregate that young men and women who go to college earn much more over the course of their lifetime than those who don't. That's not to say that we don't need to continue to chip away at the debt problem and continue our efforts, redouble our efforts to keep costs down, but it still is a good return on investment in an economic sense. So I can tell someone, look them in the eye and say that this is absolutely a smart thing for you and your family to do, is to try to get you to go to college, if that's the right choice for you substantively. And I think for most people it is.
Kind of depends on what you study, though, right? I mean, I've heard critiques of that number, that college students overall make more money over their lifetime. But I've heard people dig into the numbers, President Huddleston, and they've said, well, yes, if you're a lawyer or a doctor, but, you know, it kind of depends on what you study, and that those numbers need to take into account that some young people spend many, many years of their young adulthood paying off debt. So, yeah, you're making a decent salary, but you're also, you know, putting away a quarter of it or an eighth of it because of your loans.
Yeah, there's been a lot of renewed controversy lately.
Yeah,
about
so a lot of picking at those studies.
Yeah, there has. And I think that it is undeniably true that if you graduate with a degree in accountancy, for instance, or mechanical engineering, the odds are the day after you get out of school, you'll probably have a higher paying job than someone who graduates with a degree in, I'll pick my own discipline, of political science. However, most of the studies that look at this sort of stuff in the long term, excuse me, find that liberal arts majors do just as well, if not better, over the course of their entire career than do students who have a more vocational, more narrow training.
Really?
Sure. Yeah. So it's a there's a short-term bump in one's earning potential, but it tends to erode over time. And I think the reason for that is that liberal arts is just a great training for life. And students who go through history or sociology or political science or other or humanities disciplines learn how to write. They learn how to communicate. They learn how to work with others in teams. And if you talk to employers, those are the kinds of things they really value. I mean, obviously, they need the skills, too. They need people who can be good chemical engineers or good marketers. But long term, they need people who can think, who can write, who can collaborate and so forth. And that's what college does well, I think, is prepare people to do that.
Well, maybe if we have time, we'll go back to that.
Sure.
But I want to share you with our listeners, again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Your questions, comments, concerns are welcome for President Mark Huddleston, president of UNH, which includes campuses in Durham, Manchester, and the new UNH School of Law in Concord. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And let's go first, President Huddleston, to Brandon, waiting in Amherst. Hi, Brandon, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to touch upon a point that Mark had mentioned earlier about this idea of a social good. You know, throughout the development of our country, we realized that from an economic standpoint that, you know, from a skill set, we needed, you know, a certain educational attainment at, you know, a primary school level. And then as we advanced economically, we realized that a post-secondary education, you know, was kind of the basic level of attainment in which we needed to be successful. I think that from a societal standpoint, we're all in agreement that a four-year degree is pretty necessary within the economic environment that we find ourselves in today. And one thing, I guess, that just I guess, boils my blood, you know, when I hear the talks about budgetary funding is this idea that we can do more with less and that we should be cutting at a time where, again, we're all in agreement that a higher level of educational attainment is, you know, the primary thing in which we need to advance beyond where we are economically and to have, you know, a vibrant, progressive economy.
Yes, tough decisions, though, Brandon. If I could challenge you a little bit, I mean, higher ed, and you support it, but you've got foster kids, you've got red-listed bridges, you've got a mental health system, which is, you know, acknowledged as crumbling. So it's hard to weigh all that out, isn't it?
Sure, absolutely. I guess my response to that would be, you know, in terms of the idea of cost, you know, something only has a true cost in the long term if it doesn't have a redeemable benefit. And as Mark said, the long-term social good of everybody having a higher diversified skill set is only going to move us into, you know, a position where eventually we can look at those other things or where other things may be easier to solve. But, you know, again, you can't get something without nothing. You know, it all involves that initial cost input.
Thank you very much, Brandon. Your quick thoughts, President Huddleston.
Sounds like Brandon had a good UNH education. It was very, very astute analysis. I agree with him. The only thing that I would say in addition is that I don't think that whatever the value of higher education, and few people place a higher value than I, absolves us of the responsibility of continuing to innovate and to try to find less expensive and more imaginative ways to do what we need to do. And I think I try to make that case always when I talk to the legislature and others, that we don't sit still and simply put our hand out and ask for money. We try constantly to be imaginative in what we do and to be cost effective in what we do.
Brandon, thanks for the call. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email from Sarah in Gilmanton. She says, wondering if the president can comment on the salaries of administrators and coaches. Seems there's been a 50% increase in these salaries across the board in the last decade. It seems to me students are footing the bill for higher wages. Thank you, Sarah, for the email. President Huddleston, administrators and coaches.
Well, we do have administrators and coaches at the university. That's true. I don't have the data at my fingertips. I'd be surprised if salaries had risen that much over a decade. But I guess the major point I would make is that we live in a very competitive marketplace. And while it would be nice if all of our coaches were volunteers and if all of my administrators were happy to do the work, the very important work that they do, either for free or for the minimum wage, that's not a realistic expectation. And in point of fact, I just went through this exercise with senior administrators looking at their salaries relative to peer institutions, and they're across the board less. And that's true of our coaches as well in general. Even the coaches you see in the newspaper most often are top rank football and hockey coaches are paid less than many of their peers. So while I know it's the dollar figures look large in an absolute sense, again, I have to pay people market rates in order to keep talented folks.
And, isn't the UNH hockey coach one of the highest paid public employees in the state? The union leader sometimes comes out with those lists of people who make a lot of money.
Once a year, they reliably come out with that list. That's true. And Dick is one of the highest paid people. Although, you know, there's a lot of nuance there, too. And that's not just salary. There are other kinds of payments that get rolled in there that are one time. It's much more complicated than the press tends to show.
Well, Sarah, thanks for the email. And you can email us, too, at exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page or call 1-800-892-6477. And waiting in Durham is Peter. Hi, Peter. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks, Professor Huddleston, for taking the time to be on the air this morning. I was wondering, with all the budget cuts that happened during the past couple of years, there was very little protest from students or from I guess the families of the students who are paying these high costs, who are taking it in the chin for the huge budget cuts that the state handed down to the university. Now, if we were in Quebec or any other city in Canada or in Mexico or anywhere else, most places in the world, students would be up in arms and they'd be storming the Capitol demanding that the cuts be rescinded. As a political scientist and in your current position, what do you make of that? Why are students in the U.S. and in New Hampshire just letting it happen to themselves?
Yeah, Pete, that's a great question. Yeah, go ahead.
It is a great question. I think that's the first time I've been asked that. Let me think about that for a second. I think there are probably three reasons that spring to mind. First, unfortunately, people in New Hampshire, especially New Hampshire students and families, have gotten used to budget cuts, and they've gotten used to living in a state that seemingly doesn't value higher education all that much. So that's one thing. Second, I think we made a really concerted effort, and this may have been a mistake, but we can talk about why we did this, but we made a really concerted effort to try to shield students from the worst effects of the budget cuts in the last round, as I indicated earlier. Therefore, I think some students may not even have realized that the cuts happened, or they may have realized it in a kind of intellectual way, but they didn't really see it.
Yeah, their tuition did go up.
Right, but they didn't, it didn't feel that much different, I think, to them than it had in earlier days. For instance, on that point, Laura, one of the things I'm proudest of in that last round is that had we, as a university system, distributed those cuts to every New Hampshire resident through a higher tuition bill commensurate with the cuts, we would have raised tuition in a supplemental way by $4,650 for every New Hampshire resident. $4,650. In fact, we raised tuition by $650 for each New Hampshire resident. That means we ate $4,000 ahead for New Hampshire students. And again, it was a deliberate decision to try to buffer families and students from the worst effects of what the legislature did. But I think it speaks to Peter's question. That was one of the reasons he didn't see the sort of protest.
Well, New Hampshire is also one of the wealthiest states in the nation.
It is.
So is it possible that for many, not all, but for many, the tuition hit, you know, wasn't so terrible?
Yeah, well, that is possible. And we do studies on a regular basis looking to see what the ability is of families to pay in-state and out-of-state. And frankly, as high as our tuition is in-state, it hasn't reached the point of saturation for some families.
All right. We will talk more after a short break. Peter, thank you for that question. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. You can email as well, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Fuller Sugar House on Main Street in Lancaster. Producer and retailer of pure New Hampshire maple syrup and maple products, Sugar House open daily. FullerSugarHouse.com. And from Cardigan Mountain School's 6-week summer session combining academics with summer fun for boys and girls in grades 3 to 9 on the web at cardigan.org. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, Guster goes acoustic. We'll speak with a frontman from the pop rock band about keeping things fresh and resisting gimmicks. And archaeological trickery. What was behind the Piltdown Man fraud, and why were experts fooled for decades?
Being humans, we bring biases, assumptions, our own folly into the study of this.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth digs for the truth. Today at noon on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a Granite State take on the national gay marriage debate in light of the cases now before the U.S. Supreme Court. Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9 for that. Today, we're talking with UNH President Mark Huddleston about the challenges and new initiatives at the university. You can join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. We're also live blogging this interview. You can find out more at nhpr.org. And President Huddleston, here's an email that came in before the program from Frank in Manchester. I want all of your listeners to know that as a business owner and resident of the state of New Hampshire, I don't think it would be possible to overstate the positive ways in which the university system in New Hampshire, and UNH in particular, contribute to this state's economic vitality and quality of life. My company employs 14 UNH graduate civil engineers, and UNH is our go-to institution for talent. Any quick thoughts about Fred's email. I'm sure you love that. And then I have another question for you.
I think Frank, I think.
Frank, is, I'm sorry,
the,
Frank.
The author of the email from what you read. And well, I think we need to hire him as a spokesperson. He sounds sounds terrific. No, I think he's absolutely right. I think that people like Frank understand the tremendous benefit of UNH. And to go back to Peter's point, I think they are now becoming increasingly vocal. So while we haven't seen the kind of protests that have occurred in Quebec or in California, to take a domestic example, I think that people are no longer just sitting by passively and letting these things happen. We have now over 1,300 advocates that have signed up with UNH to take the message to the legislature and elsewhere. And I don't know if Frank is one of them, but certainly he sounds like he's gotten the message, and that needs to get out.
Well, and Frank would appreciate this. You know, you've talked a lot about the connections between the university and businesses, both in terms of innovation that you talked about and Frank's conversation about talent. And you've talked a lot about the contributions that UNH has made to the New Hampshire economy. It sounds kind of, though, President Huddleston, like the case that community colleges are making. What's the difference, and is UNH becoming more sort of direct skill focused to the workforce?
Well, we obviously have some commonalities with the community colleges. We work with them to get the message out about the importance of higher education, but we have different niches. The community colleges are much more vocationally focused and much more workforce centric than we are. Although we too have an interest in helping to produce a highly qualified workforce, it's just at a different level. For instance, take the specific example of Albany International in Rochester, which just opened a new plant, and they've forged a really healthy partnership with Great Bay Community College and the community college system more generally to produce folks who can go in and work with the composites that they need to make their company go forward. We too work with Albany International, but it's to help produce the engineers that they need to design the products that folks from the community colleges are going to be putting together. So it's we're different sides of the same coin, if you will, with respect to workforce in the state.
I want to go back to our callers again, remind you that the number is 1-800-892-6477. And then I have another email or two that I want to share with you, President Huddleston. Email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Mary's waiting in Manchester. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Hi, Mr. Huddleston. I am calling because I have found that dealing with UNH frustrating because as a working parents, I had tried to go back to school and found that the traditional type of universities where they had the education that I was looking for and felt that the upper education was important, but they were not versatile enough to be able to have evening classes or partially online classes or those types of things that make it so that if somebody is a working mom that wants to further their education and has tuition assistance to do that, will really have to quit their job in order to attend the university, or they're forced to go to a community college, which is fine but may not be offering. They particularly, I was myself looking into going to law school, it's just not anything that you can do in the state of New Hampshire unless you're willing to somehow have somebody support you. No. While you're going through 4 years of school.
Yeah, Mary. Well, and good for you for juggling all that. So I thought that UNH Manchester did cater to more, you know, so-called non-traditional students. So you're having a hard time finding classes and getting integrated.
Oh, absolutely. And I did talk to UNH a while back and, you know, had everything together. And then that one last question that, you know, I really should have asked first was, no, you have to go full-time days. And, I mean, you just, in this economy, you know, unless you're living at home and you're 19,
yeah.
It just can't be done. And there isn't a, I guess, a niche you would call that for in New Hampshire that I have found that you can actually get, you know, some type of law, medical, whatever. And myself, I was looking for law.
Okay.
Unless you want to do it, you know, like online through Phoenix or, you know, one of those types of things. And I wanted to go to a real classroom.
Sure. Mary, thanks a lot. And good luck to you, by the way. President Huddleston, what do you think?
I'd add my good wishes to Mary, too. That's admirable. And I know that she's right. It is very difficult for adults, especially those who are trying to hold down a full-time job, to enroll in exactly the programs of study that they would like at UNH or any other traditional residential institution. We're getting better at it. As I mentioned earlier, we're trying to become, as I said, a university of choice where we offer a lot more opportunities and options for people to pursue what they want to do. But there are limits to that. For instance, Mary didn't mention this, but if she had wanted to be an engineer, you just can't offer labs around the clock or online. There are certain place-bound programs and majors that require people to flex more than they may be able to do given the needs of their workplace. On the other hand, I think that we have offered an increased number of programs of study that are available. The law school is constrained by ABA accreditation as to what they can do. They're not allowed, for instance, to offer online programs anywhere.
Really?
Nope.
That seems dreadfully old-fashioned.
Well, the ABA has been called dreadfully old-fashioned by some people, I guess. There are constraints that we put on ourselves. There are constraints that others put on us, too. I would suggest that Granite State College, which is a sister institution within the university system, does a super job addressing the needs of folks like Mary. May not have exactly the program she wants, but they exist to serve the needs of folks who need that kind of flexibility, and that would be worth a look, too.
Now, I thought that was what UNH Manchester was all about students who had to work, who had children or jobs and so forth.
That's been a major part of UNH Manchester's mission. Many of their classes, if not most of their classes, are in the evening or at times after the traditional workday. Has been done, although it's also begun to do other things as well. It's become one of our go-to places for STEM initiatives. That's a very important part of what we as a university system are trying to do, and UNH Manchester has an especially prominent place in trying to reach those objectives.
STEM is science, technology, engineering.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I know.
All the rage these days. Everybody's talking about it.
Well, it's a huge need in New Hampshire. We have an enormous need for more STEM graduates in New Hampshire.
Let's take another email if we could. Mary, again, good luck to you. Thanks for calling in. This is from Maddie, and she's got two questions. I'd like to address the first one, I think, because it has to do with the university's sustainability initiative, and you guys have had a focus on that for a long time, but it's only increasing. Maddie is a senior nutrition and eco-gastronomy student at UNH. She says, how does the possibility of future public-private ventures like big box stores or office buildings in Leawood Orchards, one of the university's greenways, or in other agriculture areas around UNH campus correspond to UNH's responsibility as a land-grant university dedicated to agriculture, as well as the campus master plan that stresses the importance of preserving our agricultural heritage? So it sounds like she really likes the fact that you folks are focusing on sustainability and so forth, but concerned that there may be some building done on those lands.
Yeah, I think I can assure Maddie and any other listeners that we will not do anything to compromise our commitment to sustainability or otherwise endanger the land that we have that are devoted to those kinds of purposes. There was a discussion during the master planning process about a year or so ago that in an entirely notional way raised possibilities of repurposing some of our property. And we are a land-rich institution. We're not rich in many other ways, but we do have a lot of wonderful land around the state and in Durham, Manchester, and Concord. But we're not going to put big box stores up on the farm.
I see. So is that an urban legend, or
well,
was that discussed?
No, it's like a lot of things. There's a grain of truth, but it got blown way out of proportion. And as the master plan got finalized, it was very clear that the university made a commitment not to engage in those kind of ventures. By the same token, I will say that as a result of our pinched revenue picture, we do have to explore public-private partnerships of various sorts. We won't engage any of those that compromise our commitment to sustainability or the university's land-grant mission, but we certainly are going to have to be more imaginative about those partnerships.
Yeah, do you feel pressure to sell those properties or those lands given your financial constraints? You know, we love this parcel, it's beautiful, it's forested or whatever, but we just need the cash?
No. It's just so much a part of who we are and what we are that that's just never a question.
All right. Let's take another call if we could. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Max is joining us again from Manchester. Hi, Max. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And let me just start by saying that I'm a huge UNH hockey fan, and I'm very excited to see them here in Manchester this weekend. And that sort of leads me to my question, which is there's a lot of sort of talk nationally about schools with large sports programs that make a lot of money through TV deals or playing in large venues. The UNH hockey team's been popular for ages, and the football team has been very good for many years now. I was bummed when UMass left and we stopped being able to play at Gillette Stadium against them. But I was wondering if you could comment just on sort of the money-making or money-losing endeavors of collegiate athletics and specific to UNH.
Yeah, it's a great question, Max, and really the subject of a whole hour in general. But it is a big money maker, and it does get people excited.
Well, actually, college sports are a big money maker in a very, very small number of institutions. For the overwhelming majority of colleges and universities that play at D1 level, in football in particular, it is a huge money loser. And I think UMass will regret the decision that they made to move from our level of football, FCS football, football championship level football, to FBS football, because there is not a snowball's chance that they are going to make any money by doing that. In fact, they're just going to lose more money. And the popularity, I would predict, of their football program will decline as a result. I think that we've got a football program that I'm very proud of, not only because of our record on the field, but because of the integrity of our coaches and players. It's just it's a great, great program. Plays at very competitive levels every year, year in and year out, despite the facilities that we have. And I have no intention of trying to move that anywhere in terms of other divisions. We're at the right level now, and want to see us stay there.
Yeah, well, Max, thanks for the call. And so do the hockey programs that Max and others love, or the football programs, do they make money for UNH or lose money?
They make a little money.
Not as much as you might think.
No, not as much as you might think. We're certainly not in the kind of position that an Ohio State or a Nebraska or one of those kinds of schools that does rake in a lot of money from their high-profile football programs, for instance.
Well, our emailer, Maddie, again, talked about the food and sustainability programs. And as I said, UNH has established a reputation as a leader in sustainability. Students recently pushed President Huddleston for the university to divest its investments in fossil fuels. How feasible is that?
Well, there is a national movement that is pressuring universities to look at their portfolios and to try to divest from funds that are involved in fossil fuels. I don't think, frankly, it is an easy thing to do. While it may be a desirable thing in principle, it's very difficult to unwind those investments. It's also not clear to me that that doing so, even if we could figure out some of those complications of unwinding it, would be entirely consistent with the fiduciary responsibilities of the university or the members of the board of directors of the university foundation, all of whom believe that their primary responsibility is to manage our investments so as to produce the best total rate of return for the university. That's why people gave us the money. And that's what they believe their long-term responsibility is, not just to respond to issues of the day, but to ensure that those dollars see a return in perpetuity so that that fund will be as robust as possible in 20 years and 40 years and 100 years. What we're proposing as an alternative to divestment to our foundation board, and this is a conversation that has not at all been completed, is creating what is called a sleeve or a separate part of the fund that people who want to make investments in sustainable kinds of enterprises can do so. But that would not violate our fundamental responsibility to people who've already given us money, and it would not require us to change our overall investment philosophy for the rest of the foundation's funds.
So when someone gives you a large chunk of change, you have certain responsibilities, and you may not be able to do
correct
what the students want you to
correct
do. Interesting.
Yes.
All right. Well, I did want to ask you about that because that was in the news recently. We talked earlier about the UNH School of Law, not a lot, but a little, on track for full integration with UNH in early 2014. What does that mean for a high school student, for example, today, who might be considering UNH and might want to become a lawyer?
Well, I think it'll be a lot easier for that student to imagine a path to doing that. It's been a wonderful partnership so far, and I expect it to be nothing more than even more wonderful in the future. We've got two joint degree programs already between law and Durham-based programs, one with the MBA, one with social work. Our faculty have been back and forth on research projects. We've, I think, enriched one another's cultures already in the short time that we've been working together. This last weekend, I was able to participate in the 40th anniversary celebration of the law school, at which time Justice Scalia of the Supreme Court was our guest speaker, and
wow,
it was just a wonderful thing.
How did you get Justice Scalia to come up from
we're a very highly regarded law school, actually top 10 in the world in intellectual property law.
Wow.
It's well known.
Well, President Huddleston, I hope to talk to you again. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Always nice to be here. Thanks, Laura.
That's again President Mark Huddleston. He's president of UNH, which includes campuses in Durham, Manchester, and, as we said, the new UNH School of Law in Concord. He's been president since mid-2007. We've live blogged this interview, by the way, so if you miss pieces of it, you can go to nhpr.org and check that out. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.